There are now a record 10 Greens in federal parliament as four new Green senators assume their red leather seats and the balance of power in the Senate. Among the new representatives is Dr. Richard Di Natale, the first ever Green senator for Victoria. And he joins me in the National Interest. Dr. Richard Di Natale, welcome to the program.
G'day.
It's your first day of sitting in the Senate on Monday. Have you got a bit of nerves?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Excitement, nerves, combination of both.
A bit like the first day of school.
It is like the first day of school. You don't want to get the teacher angry.
Who's the teacher in this case?
I suppose the Speaker of the Senate. No, Bob's one of our friends.
Well, you've been trying to get yourself elected to a parliament for some time. In fact, you've tried every level of government. You've run for the job of Lord Mayor of Melbourne. You've run twice for the Victorian State Parliament and three times for the Senate, just missing out in 2007. So you finally got across the line last year. Didn't you like being a doctor?
Oh, no. Look, I have to say, I most of those elections were unwinnable, and we knew that from the outset, so it was really an exercise in flying the flag. But for quite a few years, I've juggled politics and medicine and health because, for me, politics is an extension of health. I've always felt that if you want to do something about people's health, you've got to do something about all the things that impact on people's health, their level of employment, education, income, all of those things. Health's, in the end product of, you know, a system of things that that are impacting on people upstream. And I suppose I spent a few years in the Northern Territory doing Aboriginal health, and the penny really dropped there that as important as good healthcare is, there are a lot of other things that you've got to try and address. And politics, for me, was a logical extension of that, and that's how I made the move.
So it was that experience working in the Northern Territory that really got you thinking about a political career or engagement in politics?
Yeah, I was interested in politics before that, but really as an observer. And I think from that experience, I decided, look, it's time to be a bit more active, and wasn't sure where it would lead. I've, as I said, sort of juggled my medical and political career simultaneously, knowing that both things were important and not really sure where either would lead. And in the end, here I am on the verge of taking a seat in the Senate. And I think, you know, I think for me, politics is a logical extension of public health, of good public health.
Because you're not just a GP, are you? You're also, you did a master's in public health.
That's right. I specialised in public health medicine, which is really looking at the health of a population, not from the clinical point of view, but from a policy point of view. And it's really important that you address all of the things I talked about earlier, as well as things like immunisation, prevention. All of those things are good public health practice. And there's a very strong political dimension to those things as well.
And I think you worked in India as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I spent some time in India working on a HIV prevention project. I worked with the Nossal Institute there. We got some funding from the Gates Foundation. And we got some money essentially as part of a HIV prevention initiative. And I was lucky enough to spend a year or two going backwards and forwards.
And what sort of work, whereabouts in India, what sort of work was
it? It was
that?
Actually in the northeast of India, which is an area that not many people know about. It's the states of Nagaland and Manipur. Very interesting dynamic there, a bit like Kashmir in terms of the there's an autonomous struggle going on. So a very delicate environment to work in. And we were basically given some money to try and work with injecting drug users mainly, a huge HIV epidemic among injecting drug users. So our programs were addressed at that level.
So let's talk a bit about the Senate. Bob Brown is reorganising the portfolios now that there's some extra Green senators coming in to the Parliament. Do you know what portfolios you're going to have?
Yes, well, I've been lucky enough to have been given the health portfolio, which I'm very excited about. I've also got multiculturalism, gambling, sport, East Timor and West Papua. So I'm really looking forward to...
So there's a special portfolio for East Timor and West Papua?
Well, I think what's happened is there's been a decision that those people who have special interests in particular areas and can bring some of that expertise into the parliament, we've allowed some flexibility in that area, which I think is a good thing. It reflects the fact that we're a party that's engaged with the community and across a range of spheres. And I've been lucky enough to have been given that one. But I think the main focus of my portfolio will be around the health sphere.
And what specific things would you like to achieve in health?
Well, I think we've got a health system at the moment that focuses almost exclusively on acute care, the hospital sector and so on. And that's important, but there are some real gains to be made in the area of prevention. So we've got to have a health system that's much more prevention focused. We can do some things around alcohol reform. I think that's very important.
What sort of things? I mean, on this program, we've talked, for example, about putting a floor price on alcohol so that the minimum cost of a standard drink is around the cost of a beer rather than cask wine, that sort of thing? Is that the sort of stuff you're talking about?
It sure is, yeah. I think that's the sort of – I mean, that's a very positive initiative. I mean, we've got a real problem with the sponsorship of alcohol, mainly through sport. So it's an intersection of two of the portfolios I hold. I'm really concerned about the growing influence of the alcohol industry through the sporting sector. So you've got young kids who'll often be watching the cricket through the day or the footy at night, and they're being bombarded by the alcohol industry, targeting very much young drinkers. So that's an area that we need to work on. We've also got to look at pricing in general. I think there's some the whole issue of taxation around alcohol could do with a shake-up, so I'll be looking at that. But then there's also the question of obesity and obesity prevention, and we've got to get much better with our food labelling. Food labelling is a big issue, and again, good preventative health.
And I would imagine that you want a ban on junk food advertising during children's television time,
sure,
that sort of thing.
Sure, yep. And Bob mentioned that in his address to the press club this week.
And did you say gambling is part
Gambling's part of my portfolio.
So what about gambling on sports betting and that sort of thing?
Yes, look, that's a really sort of a growing cancer on I think, some of our, you know, favourite football codes, the AFL. I'm a self-confessed ex-footballer. And look, I love watching the odd game of footy, but the influence of the gaming industry through football is, I think, corrosive. We're getting online odds now, minute by minute, through all the major sporting codes. It's not a good thing, and we need to stamp that out. Not to mention the influence of poker machine through sporting clubs and AFL sporting clubs particularly.
So you'd be in supporting Andrew Wilkie's attempts to change the way poker machines work and have mandatory pre-betting limits and those sorts of
Absolutely.
Things?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to working with Andrew and Nick Xenophon on the area of problem gambling. I think it's a big issue, and you know, really looking forward to that opportunity.
Now, this is interesting because there seems to me to be a bit of a contradiction here in the Greens' policy, because on the one hand, you want, you know, greater restrictions on legal drugs. I presume you support plain packaging on tobacco, on
sure.
cigarettes as well,
sure.
on alcohol, on addictive products, poker machines. Yet on the other hand, the Greens' approach to illicit drugs is actually less regulation. I mean, you want to decriminalise drug use. You want to have safe injecting rooms and the like. So isn't there a contradiction in these two approaches?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, they're quite congruous. If you look at the approach, for example, to, and you mentioned medically supervised injecting rooms, that's actually a regulatory reform. What we need to do around that area is we do need to make sure that we provide better public amenity. We provide an environment where if overdoses happen, people can get treatment. And the thing that's often forgotten around that area is that what they do is they facilitate access into treatment. So people who are often not connected with medical services in that environment suddenly are at the interface of treatment. And it's a really important way of facilitating treatment. And, in fact, the King's Cross trial was a very successful one in part for that reason.
But still, isn't there this contradiction? I mean, you know, part of the debate around alcohol and poker machines is availability and price. If they're available and the price is low, then more people will use them. So doesn't the decriminalisation approach to drugs have the opposite
effect?
No,
you're making an assumption there, Peter, because in fact, what's interesting is if you look at some of the reforms that have been done around cannabis, for example, some states have a regulatory regime where they allow a small number of plants to be grown, for example, for personal use. In fact, there's no evidence at all that consumption increases with those changes in those settings. If you look at, for example, what Portugal's done in the area of removing criminal penalties for illicit drug use, that's not to say, of course, that we don't pursue people who are dealing in illicit drugs. Of course, that's got to continue. People are making money off the illicit drug trade, and we have to stop that. But if you look at what happens at the individual user level, consumption's not affected by changing that. In fact, what you do is you increase the opportunities for those people to stop using illicit drugs because they get better access to treatment.
This is the National Interest on ABC Radio National. I'm speaking to new Victorian Green Senator, the first Green Senator from Victoria, Dr. Richard Di Natale. Now, your entrance into the Senate marks a turning point, along with three other new colleagues, 9 Green Senators in total. You're officially now the third major force in the Senate. That's a lot of responsibility as well. You can make or break government legislation depending which side you fall on.
Sure is, yes. No, I'm very aware of that. I've had a few sleepless nights during the week. It's an important responsibility, and we've been in a share of balance of power over the term of the last government. We've used that responsibly. We've helped some really important packages get through. For example, the economic stimulus package was passed with our support. But you know, you've got to remember that we can't make or break legislation on our own.
Sure.
It needs to be done in conjunction with either of the old parties. So our position in terms of balance of power is to use it responsibly, constructively, to work across party lines, and not to oppose for the sake of opposition's sake. We've got a party in there already that's happy doing that. We're going to try and be much more constructive in that role.
In the past, we had the Democrats occupying a similar position, and they did tear themselves apart through internal division. What's, you know, particularly over the GST, what's to stop the Greens going the same way?
Oh, look, I'm very aware that, you know, it'll be a difficult period, and with increased responsibility comes increased challenges. I'm very, very aware of that. I think one of the key differences is we've got a very clear idea about who we are and what we stand for. Whereas I think with the Democrats, they position themselves as a moderating influence between the two old parties. As the convergence occurred over the period of the 90s and recently, what we saw was this ideological convergence, and suddenly the Democrats didn't have a space in which to operate. So we don't define ourselves relative to either of the old parties. We have a very clear agenda, a progressive one, an optimistic one, a forward-looking long-term agenda, and we're not going to be defined by what either of the major parties do.
What's the Greens' policy on crossing the floor or voting against your party?
We're allowed a conscience vote. I think that's a good thing.
On all matters?
On all matters, but you've got to remember that if you look at our record, that's been exercised very, very rarely in the past, and I doubt whether that'll be an issue over the term of the next parliament.
As you said a moment ago, taking on more responsibility also brings with it greater challenges. I mean, we can see that at the moment in Tasmania, where the Greens have a minister, Nick McKim. He's the education minister. He's closing 20 schools, much to the upset of parents and indeed much to the annoyance of your leader, Bob Brown. He's recently stood down prison guards who are threatening strike action at a prison. I mean, this is where it starts becoming serious for the Greens, isn't it?
Sure, sure. And I mean, I'm with Bob. I don't want to see any schools close. I understand.
But I mean, Tasmania needs to, balance its budget.
Nick's facing some challenges in Tasmania. There's no question about that. And he's got some difficult decisions ahead. I'd rather see that those cuts were made in other areas. Not being a Tasmanian parliamentarian, I'm not going to give him advice as to where those cuts should be made. But I'm with Bob on that one.
The Greens have been at pains, and you've been at pains in this interview to portray the party as, you know, a reliable player in the political system. You know, you're no longer a one-issue party, you're not a fringe group, you're a legitimate third force. Did you wince then when you heard Bob Brown this week in the National Press Club talking about, you know, world parliaments and that sort of thing?
No, look, I think it's great. I mean, we don't have vision in politics anymore, and Bob was realistic. He doesn't see that happening in our lifetime, but we need a few dreamers in Parliament. We don't have those anymore. But, the great thing about Bob is he can dream big, but he's got his feet firmly on the ground. He's a tough negotiator. He's a pragmatist. And I think it's a great mix. So, no, I'm really proud of being in a party that bigs dream, but has also got their feet firmly on the ground.
It was a bit of a free kick, though, wasn't it, for your critics? You know, to then have you labelled as the sort of the Maddies.
I have to say, Peter, we don't need to give them any free kicks. They take them on their own. There's clearly, the Australian's been very open and honest in terms of the fact that their agenda is to destroy the Greens. So
much of the Australian newspaper. I was thinking more of, for example, Julie Bishop saying Australians should brace themselves for more of this lunacy from the Greens as they assume the balance of power.
Well, you wouldn't expect Julie to say anything, to say any differently, really. So, no, I'm pleased that we put some big things out there. I mean, as I said, Bob made the point it's unlikely to happen. But if we don't put those things on the national agenda, they won't be there. I mean, it's as simple as that. There are some tough issues that need to be on the national agenda: dying with dignity, removing the troops from Afghanistan, equal love in marriage. If the Greens aren't there in the Australian Parliament putting those things on the national agenda, they simply won't be there. So I'm really pleased he did that.
What's your approach to immigration?
Well, I come from an Italian family. I'm the product of multicultural Australia. I'm really proud of the contribution that migrants have made to this country. My family, like millions of families just like them, have made an enormous contribution to Australian life. I think it's the reason we're a really rich and prosperous country. And one of the portfolio areas I do have is multiculturalism, and I'm looking forward to, again, embracing the notion of multiculturalism at a time when internationally people like Angela Merkel and David Cameron have said that it's a failed experiment. I don't think it is. I think it's what makes this country great. And you've got to, I think you've got to remember, it, you know, that you've got people talking about multiculturalism as a forum for division. What it allows you to do is to define those things that unite you as a nation, respect for law, respect for democracy and human rights, and then to express the diversity that exists within the great nation that's Australia.
Multiculturalism is one thing, though, but the question I ask you is, what is your view on immigration?
Oh, well, I think immigration's been a good thing for this country.
But, I mean, no, but I'm talking into the future because, I mean, Bob Brown has clearly expressed great reservations. I mean, he said, or the Greens, on behalf of the Greens, that, you know, a population of 35 million by 2050, which is where Australia's heading at the moment, is unsustainable. Now, if you're going to not go to 35 million, then that means a dramatic cut in migration levels.
Well, there's already been a dramatic cut. There's been a significant cut, bipartisan support for a significant cut in immigration already. It's happened under the current government. No one's suggesting you have an open doors policy. I'm not suggesting that. Bob's not suggesting it. You do have to, at some point, make a decision about the level of immigration in this country. You make that decision on the basis of a number of things. One of the things Bob's saying is we need to put sustainability up there front and foremost. I think that's important. That's often never factored into the equation when we talk about immigration. It's always about skills and jobs, which are important, but sustainability needs to be a factor in that decision. And what Bob's saying is, let's make sure that we've got a sustainable Australia. That means making sure we invest in infrastructure. It means making sure that when we generate power, we do it sustainably, that we can make sure we've got enough water resources. And then immigration becomes much less of an issue.
You said yourself you're from an immigrant Italian working class background. That's how you've described yourself in interviews. What does your family think about the path you've taken in politics?
I'm mad to get involved in politics. Dad thinks it's a dirty business. He reckons that, you know, why would a good doctor boy decide to move into politics?
Give up a good career.
Give up a good career in medicine and get involved in politics. No, look, they're incredibly supportive. I think they'd be supportive of whatever decision I'd make. Dad might say those things, but I remember growing up, SBS News was always on and Dad was always having his 2 cents worth about what was going on in the world. And I'm sure it's part of the reason I'm here today.
I mean, you've said yourself that traditionally, I suppose, you would have been more likely to have been someone recruited by the Labor Party.
Oh, well, I think if you look at my history, I think that's pretty clear that maybe 30 years ago, that's where I would have ended up. But the Labor Party is a very different beast to the party it was 30 years ago, and the Greens weren't around 30 years ago. So, you know, my values are very clearly progressive values. I stand for social justice and environment. I've expressed it through my medical career, my work in health, and now I've got the opportunity to express it politically, and it's a great honour and a great privilege.
Some people on the left would see the Greens as part of a zero-sum game. That is, the only way in which the Greens make gains in Parliament is to take votes away and seats away from Labor, and that the ultimate winners from this process are the Coalition.
Well, the facts just don't support it. If you look at where our vote comes from, it's true, most of our support base does come from people who previously voted Labor, but a significant chunk, often up to a third, do come from people who have voted for the Conservative side of politics. And, you know, mostly you speak to people that I speak to day to day, and they often say that there's very little difference between the old parties, and it's really the Greens who stand alone in terms of that progressive vision for the country.
So you're off to Canberra on Monday. You'll be taking your seat in the Senate for the first time. How well, we're going to talk in just a moment about the orientation and sort of professional development that MPs get. How well prepared have you been?
Well, we're in a slightly awkward position because there's normally a big winter break, and so normally we get a month or so through July to prepare.
So we're being appointed on the 1st of July, and then you've got a month to prepare before you
actually
have to sit.
There's an induction process. You've flown up to Canberra, you sit with the clerks of the Senate, and you walk through the whole procedural, all of the issues that go on in the Senate. But unfortunately, this time, because there is this unusual sitting on the 4th of July, we're actually going to have our induction week after we start, which makes it the first week interesting. I'm lucky, though, that I've got the support of the existing team.
But it does make the first week interesting because the government wants to push through a lot of legislation.
Sure.
Because they've got your numbers to help them.
They do. And one of the things that we as a party have agreed is that the existing senators will hold on to their portfolios for the time being. We'll have a handover towards the end of the week, and we'll get support from the existing senators, and I think we'll need it over the first week.
Richard Di Natale, thank you for your time.
Great pleasure.
Victorian Green Senator Dr. Richard Di Natale, who will sit in federal parliament for the first time on Monday. Give us your thoughts on the new balance of power in the Senate via the website abc.net.au/rn/national interest or by leaving a message on the feedback line 1300 936 222.